Welcome back to Thirst World Problems. This is part two of our conversation with Kitty Amon from Uncle Nearest Whiskey and host of the Drinking Like Ladies podcast. It's going to be a fun way to wrap up our conversation on whiskey. So hopefully you enjoy this one and you've listened to the first one. And if not, go back, listen to the first one, come back, enjoy yourselves, you know. Or if you wanted to listen to this one first and then go back, if you're a time traveler, you can do that too. Anyways, we're going to hop right into things. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Thirst World Problems Podcast, where we talk about drinks, current events, music, and more. Now, here's your host, Nick Dugal, and his panel of experts, B, Bell, and the infamous Doc.
Kitty, you kind of mentioned that you're a historian. You kind of mentioned like women empowerment. Is that some of the stuff that's driven you towards the Uncle Nearest brand and being an ambassador for that?
Yes, thank you so much. So I met Font, like when I first learned the story. So this is a brand that I just have been so amazed by. And I, you know, followed the story when I first learned about it. And then when I learned about Nearest. So his story, so Uncle Nearest was the first African-American distiller we have record of. I say record of because he probably was not the only African-American master distiller, but we know about his experience for a few very specific reasons. So he was distilling. He was born into slavery, we think, in 1820. Again, not such good records being kept about people in general, I think, but certainly not enslaved people about their birth in that period. So we don't know exactly, but we say 1820 because that's what he was judged as being a 60-year-old man during the census in 1880. Anyway, so he was born in Maryland and he ended up in Tennessee where he was doing his distilling on a farm where a young Jack Daniel went to live and work as a little chore boy. So Nearest was actually the distiller. It's called the Dan Call Farm.
Young Jack Daniel.
Young Jack Daniel, yes.
I don't know why that got me. Okay, sorry. Anyway, continue.
Oh my God, it's so funny. He was actually a little boy when he went to go work on the farm. Dan Call was the person who owned the farm. And so for a long time, the narrative about Jack Daniels was like that Jack went to go live and work on this farm and he learned how to distill from Dan Call, who also was a preacher. So that was why I had to have a laugh when you called me a nun. Nearest was actually the one who was doing the distilling, and then he stayed working. So when Jack bought the farm, Nearest was already a free man. He had been emancipated in 1865. And when Jack took over distilling, he actually took over the distilling operations because that man, Dan Call, married a teetotaler. So this was during the rise of the temperance movement. It was very, very strong. And I think Tennessee had a pretty strong temperance party then. And so, you know, these people, he was apparently this amazing preacher and the people in his congregation were like, you're going to have to choose. Like, you know, you can't make the best whiskey in town and be the best preacher in town. So he shows God preaching his community, his congregation, and sold the distillery to Jack. And so Nearest would have been an employee and a partner of Jack. Their relationship is just, you know, amazing from what we know about it. So the original distillery for Jack Daniels was Nearest Green. And this story came out in 2016, at least to me. I had never heard it. And I think a lot of people in the North hadn't heard it, although from what I understand, Tennessee in the area, people understood. But they never mentioned Nearest in the branding. And then all of a sudden, this became part of the conversation that Jack Daniels was, there's a New York Times article about it, about their business decision of how to bring Nearest story back into the story. And so I saw that in 2016, which is exactly when Fawn Weaver, who's our founder and owner, saw it. So I was also studying this story. And many people in the liquor business were in the same boat. And then a year later, I see this article again in the New York Times, and I'm like, who is this woman? Like, what is happening? And then 2 years later, I had already written the book had come out. But when I started to really understand what she was doing with this brand, and like, I was just, it was astonishing to me that there could be something that would be telling an untold story, which is something I'm super passionate about, and just celebrating and correcting history, you know, like giving us the truth that we all need to know and that deserves to be known. And so, yeah, it's just for me, that's exactly why I wanted to be involved. And to this day, it's like, you know, we were talking earlier about Mondays. No one's usually that excited on Sunday to talk about Monday. And I'm excited to talk about Monday. I like legit love this brand so much. And I just love telling and sharing the story of Nearest. It astonishes me every day that I get to be part of it.
Just before we move on a bit ahead here, but just you mentioned earlier kind of the relationship between, I guess, Jack and Nearest, and just going through some of the notes and doing some research for this, like that relationship, and I guess the way that Jack often spoke about Nearest kind of surprised, quite frankly, surprised me. I didn't realize that was even part of the history. So could you just tell the listeners a little bit about that kind of relationship?
Yeah. So again, like a lot of it, I mean, a lot of the story is, so first of all, the story, the thing that's so incredible to me about Fawn, who is the owner of our company, Fawn Weaver, is that it's just like, you know, the stones aren't being left unturned, right? So before, from what I understand, by the time the brand was a brand with whiskey in a bottle, you know, we have 10,000 pieces of historical documentation about Nearest, right? So the research is really going into this product just to try to understand who he is. And that's really what Fawn's goal was in the beginning. She didn't want to make a whiskey. She wanted to tell the story, learn this, first of all, learn the story of Nearest. Who is this man who contributed to the most famous American whiskey in the entire world that we don't know about? And then, you know, if it's a good story, she was like, I want to try to share this story, you know. And her background is actually, she's a writer. And she was like, maybe there's a movie, maybe there's a book here. This is kind of way. And then over the course of doing her interviews and like really getting to know both Nearest's family, as well as the descendants of the people who inherited Jack, because Jack didn't have any children, but people who, you know, inherited the brand and were very, very close with it. And she just kept hearing like the best way to honor him is to make a whiskey. The best way to honor him is to make a whiskey. So, but truly what we know about Jack, you know, there's a biography that is really fun and interesting to read. Facts. I want to say that parts of it seem, I don't know if editorialized is the right word, but there's some colorful writing in the beginning where he's imagining Jack as a little boy, in this kind of way where you're just like, oh no, this would be your story that you're telling me about Jack Daniels right now. But generally, like the biography that was written about him came out in 1963, I think, and it has the most information that we know about Jack. But he was close to Nearest. Like he mentions Nearest is mentioned more in this biography than Jack's own family, like that he actually had a somewhat tumultuous relationship with. So we believe that they would have been partners. So Nearest stopped making the whiskey, we believe in 1884, which is when Jack moved the distillery from the original site to the site where it is now. Opened in 1885, and Nearest did not go with him, but his sons did. So he had two sons that went, and there's been a green employed at Jack Daniels since then. So Nearest was really celebrated and known in the town. His family was, you know, certainly well respected and known for their work and known for their involvement with the distillery. So it's really, really cool. I mean, this was like post Civil War Reconstruction era in Tennessee. And from what I understand also, that's really interesting is the town of Lynchburg, so that town square, they didn't really observe Jim Crow. I think there's only like one or two businesses. And I didn't know that. And I think that's, we think Nearest and Jack and their relationship maybe really had some influence with that, you know, like, because it was, he was a very influential man. All over the world, but like certainly in the town of Lynchburg. So,
this is a huge part of American history as well, right? Like, this is big. That's something you would never, like, that's something unheard of, especially then, right?
Yeah, we think so. And so, it's there's so much about it that's like really important to hear right now, too. In the States, there's so much division, and just so much, things are very, very polarized. So when I know Fawn speaks about like when she learned this story, it just gave her so much hope. And that's something that I feel like everybody at the company kind of taps into on a daily basis. Like it just really makes you feel like there is a way to do better and be better, you know? but truly, to your point too, about stories, you know, we see how, and like, you know, we don't know why, like they did tell the story of Nearest, I think, from what I understand, as part of the marketing, for some time, and then it just got left out. And so it's kind of like, it's one of those things where we have to think about how are we going to write these people back into the story so that we can understand the true picture.
So what is the relationship like now, I guess, with the two brands, with Jack and Uncle Nearest?
It is so good. It is amazing. It's amazing. So very, very interesting question, because I think a lot of people, people actually get confused. I have people ask me all the time if we're owned by Brown-Forman, which is the parent company, or they think that we're a line extension or something like that, which we're not. We're two different companies. But absolutely, like the story of Near, Fawn, who is our owner, talks, you know, she's very, very close. Is very close with everybody over at Brown-Forman, and they share, like, for example, they share obviously it's a shared history. So it was her research that helped them figure out, like a beautiful, like there's a kind of a museum at the distillery for Jack Daniel's. So there's a section of that, which is, dedicated to Nearest now, which is like right when you walk in, which is amazing. And then we also just created and announced this in the spring, the Nearest and Jack Initiative, which is an initiative, devoted to, creating opportunities for people of color in the spirits business. So there's like a marketing track. There's also a program that they're funding at an HBCU in Tennessee to teach distilling. And all of that's going to be allocated to people of color, and then trying to cultivate talent in a meaningful way. I'm not sure how much you guys are knowing about the ins and outs of these companies. Very male, very white. Very older, you know.
Really? Shocking to me. That's shocking to me.
You know? Oh my gosh, it's so funny. My friend always talks about how he gets so bad, like when I work whiskey shows, like about, you know, sometimes I'll hire people to work the whiskey shows with me. Of course I have to, right? If there's anyone older at the table, they're just going to talk to that person. If there's any guy, any, you know, who's older than 50, like they're going to want to know about the whiskey from that person. Even if that person doesn't know anything and is like, you really should talk to her. So, you know, but so truly the, you know, the part, it's viewed as like a real, it's a beautiful relationship though. The fact that there's so much big support, and it's not, you know, I don't think the two even compete in this way. Like, yeah, they're both Tennessee whiskeys and we share a history, but like, how could a brand compete with Jack Daniel's? Biggest American whiskey brand in the whole world. Like, so it, you know, technically it doesn't even feel like, it feels super complimentary and really cool.
Well, it's super weird to see two brands, like you said, like still in the same category though, working that way together. And you're saying that they're working together on this initiative to bring in people of color into these positions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool. And it's, we donated equal amounts of money as well too, which is really interesting to me because we're a much, much smaller company, but I think this is just me talking my opinions. but I just think it's so cool that both sides are, you know, investing in the same way in a really super meaningful way. I'm so excited. I think they already have the students picked out to be in the program. I haven't met them yet or anything, I don't think, but I'm just excited to meet these people and see their careers develop, you know?
So what are the lines of, like, what's the full complement of, I guess, the Uncle Nearest brand?
Yeah, sure. So we have three expressions right now. And I will tell you about them. So the first one, this one is our 1884. Listeners, I'm holding up a bottle of 1884 whiskey, which is a 7-year-old. And this is actually created. So the great-great-granddaughter of Uncle Nearest works with our company. Her name is Victoria Butler, and she is incredible. And she came on originally working with the Nearest Grain Foundation, but has moved over into whiskey now. And she, so this project is super cool, the 1884. It's a 7-year-old whiskey. Mash bill is the same for both. So it's going to be super high corn, like 85% corn, malted barley. But the whiskey itself is 7 years old. And anytime you see 1884 on the label, it's going to mean that there was a panel of Nearest Green's relatives that helped curate that batch. So one person, it would be like if we made our whiskey together, all four of us, like we're the team. And then one person is like the chairperson for that. and so in the case of this whiskey, it was Victoria, who's Nearest great-great-granddaughter. She has since been named our master blender. So her input will be involved with all of our whiskey now, but this is the first one. And so you'll always know if you flip it over and look on the back, whoever's bottle it was, they have their name there, which is really, really cool. So it's a beautiful
That bottle was full beginning of the year.
Oh my God.
Just Belle's questions just made her like pour some.
So that's our 1884. And then we also have a different expression, which is our 1856. This is the first expression that we came out with. And this one is same mash bill, but you'll see it's actually a lot darker. You can even just see in the bottle. And that is because it is an older whiskey. So it has a blend of between 8 and 14-year-old whiskeys in the mix. And it is delicious. It's the first one I showed you, 1884, is 93 proof. 1856 is 100 proof. So we're talking about high proof stuff, but that's what we think Nearest would have made. We think it would have been on the higher proof end. It's delicious. And then we also have another product called Uncle Nearest 1820, which is very, very rare and hard to find. And at this point, I think right now, you can probably only get it at the distillery. That's a single barrel. So usually pretty highly allocated, but it's very delicious.
They all sound quite delicious, to tell you the truth.
Yes.
We need to try that.
I know. Have you guys tried them? So what's happening in Canada? Can you get Uncle Nearest in Canada?
No, we haven't been able to lock our hands on a bottle out here. I mean, COVID's kind of prevented our travel, but...
I know.
Can we talk about your podcast?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that? Let's, what made you decide to, it's you and Misty?
Yeah.
Real name, Misty.
Yeah, those are our real name.
You guys, what made you guys decide to do a podcast?
So we loved the work that we did on the book. And I think we just wanted to have a chance to extend that like creative and collaborative experience of sharing stories of cool women. But most of the women that we did in the book, we wrote about in the book, are women who aren't alive anymore. So we were thinking, oh, you know, we'd really love to like give, you know, first of all, have a chance to sit down and talk with amazing women that are doing cool things now.
Absolutely. They're still alive.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's really been the goal. We launched it during the crisis, the beginning, just because. So we did a little bit of a pivot because we both have restaurant industry. I mean, pivot, gosh, we keep saying this word here.
Pivot. I always say that. I always say pivot too.
It's just, we're in a pivot, right? Like since the whole COVID-19, you know, now we're going to be pivoting back to our original intent. So we took a little break for the summer, but we'll be back in the fall.
How was the experience though when you first started?
Oh, it's so much fun. I learned a lot about gear. Yeah, which is fun. I learned a lot about you know, about all of that stuff. But the experience is fantastic. It's like, you know, getting to spend, usually our interviews are anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half before they're edited. So, you know, we get to spend all this time usually researching the people before they come on the show and then really learning about what very cool women are doing all over the country and then hopefully soon all over the world. It's just really, really nice and really inspiring. Like, I feel like I'm always taking away something that I don't know if I would have gotten that out of the interview beforehand. You know what I mean?
Belle, you got any questions on the gauntlet?
Ooh, the gauntlet.
Well, she's prepared for it. Are you ready?
I don't know.
You're not allowed to prepare.
No, I don't. I don't know. I just know that you do it.
All right. So the way that it works, and I think you already know, but the way that it works is we're just going to ask you a bunch of rapid fire questions and just go ahead and ask the first thing that pops into your head.
Okay.
All right. Oh, nice and easy one for you. What's your favorite shot?
Oh, whiskey and tequila. and whiskey
together.
Oh, tequila. Whoa. That's blackout for me.
I know, tequila is so good though.
All right. What's your favorite movie?
Jeez. The first thing that popped into my head was The Princess Bride. I guess I'm seven. I'm 7 years old.
Nice classic. What's one time you purposely messed with a customer?
Oh my God.
Truth's coming out now.
I'm such a like, try to be like a good little girl, you know? Like, so I never was like, even when I was real mad at people, I would never like do it, you know? But one thing that I used to think I would do, and then I would like feel like, is like if I had, I worked at a really popular Spanish tapas restaurant in Boston called Toro. It's amazing. You should totally go. And our dish that is like, was the signature, was their version of elote, which is the Mexican street corn. With a ton of mayo, like garlic mayo, aioli, and cheese. And it's a thing that it's delicious, but it's not, they wouldn't cut it off the cob at the time that I worked there. And it's like, it's just like a messy thing to eat. Sometimes if I was feeling like a little like cativa, like a little naughty, if I had like a section full of like couples on first dates, I would just like be like, you have to get the corn. It's so amazing. And then I would just like giggle when they would have like a piece of corn right here. You know? Or if the girl was like really, I'm profiling saying it's a girl because I guess men did this as well. But you know, sometimes people get it and they're like, how do I eat this? Because it's so messy and they know it's going to be messy. And like, I get it. They don't want to get it on their glass, or they want to look sexy while they're having dinner. And like, you just can't do it. Like, I would just be like,
you just got to go at it. That's the key.
Yeah, you got to go at it. I think you're going to, I always thought I was like helping,
Helping people along.
Cut to the chase.
get straight to the point, right?
Well, if you're going to be dating someone, like, don't you want to know, like, if they're a picky eater beforehand? You know what I mean? Like,
playing Cupid, eh? Playing Cupid. If you were stuck on one reality show, what would it be?
Well, I don't watch a lot of reality shows, but I'm a really big fan of Below Deck. Because I think it scratches two itches. Like, one is the like, there's like the behind the scenes service aspect, which I love because I was in service for so long because it follows the staff on these boats or whatever. And then there's also the like, you know, voyeurism of these rich people. And then like, you know, so I think I could handle Below Deck.
All right, let's go. Worst haircut or hairstyle you've ever had?
Oh, bangs. Oh my God. Yeah. Well, yeah, bangs, I think. Little kid, you know, the age from like 9 to 11 where nothing is, you know, everybody has their awkward phase. Maybe you guys didn't have one. You guys were all pretty cute.
That's true. Skip mine. B though had was still in his, just came out of his.
I have bangs right now. That's what I'm wearing a hat.
Oh, I love it. No, I just, it doesn't look good on my face and they were probably too short. I was like, whatever.
What's the shadiest place you've ever had a drink?
Okay. Shadiest place. There's a dive bar. I'm trying to think of, I'm like racking my brain about all the like dive bars that I've been to because I like them. And it wasn't like super shady, but there was one down the street from my house called the Drinking Fountain that I like super loved, but it was like definitely the kind of place where like the bartender might just yell at you for ordering something stupid or definitely like super bright lighting and like from back in the day.
That's
like,
scary.
You know,
I get scared, like not in terms of where you're saying it is, but like say you order something and the bartender just gets just pissed out.
Just because like, she's like a, yeah, like a bitchy Boston bartender, like who doesn't take shit. Like
that would scare me, honestly.
Yeah. So I loved it though.
All right. Nice and easy one here too. If you were planning a concert and you had to bring three acts out on stage, who would they be?
Oh my gosh. I'm planning a concert and I had to bring three acts. Can they be from any time period?
Any time period, but they have to be alive.
Oh, okay. I think everyone I was thinking of was dead. Jay-Z, Beyonce, and Lady Gaga.
Okay, let's hear the dead ones. Let's hear the dead ones that you had planned.
Then. Oh, I don't know why my brain just, I started envisioning like us having like a USO style show with like Marilyn Monroe opening. And then maybe like Sam Cooke. Sam Cooke. And then like maybe Ella Fitzgerald, because I think she was friends with Marilyn. I don't know. I got really excited getting real vintage with that one.
Okay. And we'll end it
Get Bob Hope walking down.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, he's the MC. God. He's going to be the MC, right? we'll end it on a nice, easy one for you. What's the name of your podcast?
Oh, it's called Drinking Like Ladies.
There you go. We talked about it, but we never actually quite heard what the name of it was. So
I'm pretty sure we actually did, though. But, well, you know, the listeners will tell us that, right? So.
Well, there you have it. Drinking Like Ladies. Where can people like subscribe and listen to that?
Most sure. So we're on Apple and Spotify. So we're pushed through the Apple platform. Yeah, we have a Captivate page too, but we also have a website. I should just tell you to go to our website, drinkinglikeladies.com.
There you go.
Nice. There we go.
And what's the one takeaway about Uncle Nearest that our listeners should have at the end of this pod?
Drink it. It's more than whiskey. It's celebrating an untold story and celebrating an African-American man with a name on the bottle. That's never been done with a whiskey. African-American owned company. It's never been done with a small independent liquor brand. We're growing. but there are a lot of firsts. And so, you know, you can certainly raise a glass to all those with us. We would love it.
Cheers to that.
Oh, cheers.
Cheers.
I drank all mine, so. I drank it before the, you know what?